I can go back and listen to it when I feel like I can't write enough. So I just started by asking people what you remember most about the gardens or what they were like when you were there. And I think you already have some things in mind that you want to say, so I'll just let you go.
Well, let me just ask, first of all, mm-hmm. do the gardens still exist?
Yes.
Are they still on that same hillside?
Yes, they are on that same hillside.
Right. So that tradition has been upheld.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got to remember, this is the late 70s.
Yeah. So when were you there exactly?
I was at the university from the fall of 78 to the spring of 81.
Okay.
And I was garden chairman. Your records are probably better than mine. I think from 79 to 81.
Okay.
I helped with the cleanup in 1978 in the fall. And that's how I got to know the thing. They put up a sign that you could help clean up the gardens and take any of the remaining vegetables out of the garden after the cleanup was finished.
Mm-hmm.
And so I helped out, and my wife and I just put amazing amounts of vegetables in the freezer that weekend. there was a lot of bountiful gardening that went on,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of people got jobs during the summer, mm-hmm. and they just left.
Yeah.
The gardens were left to just grow unless they had someone take over their plot and manage things. I remember the cleanup days. It was always rather interesting because there was a group of us that would go through and get all the sticks and the chicken wire and all the things that the people used to support their plants.
Mm-hmm.
Pull all that out
mm-hmm.
so that the university extension could come in and plow.
Yeah.
And then after that, we would take vegetables. Well, there was always a truck
mm-hmm.
parked out on the on the furthest corner of the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And someone told me that it was some guy from a local organic restaurant. Now, organic restaurants were very, very few at that time.
Yeah.
So he would come out and just sort of take things without helping with the cleanup. But no one really challenged him because he wasn't taking all that much. But it was kind of interesting that truck was always parked there on the day of the cleanup.
Yeah.
No one found out about it. Nobody knows.
Yeah.
So, but we, the plowing,
mm-hmm.
They would, as I recall, they would put manure on it.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And then, basically plow everything under and put fresh manure on it.
Okay.
And then plow everything under in the spring.
Mm.
The spring never happened there before Memorial Day.
Yeah. yep.
One year I thought we were going to get in there early, and I thought we could do it, and they just kept telling me, no, it's too wet, we can't plow.
Mm. Yeah.
So I was always trying to push the edge to see if we could get there a little bit early, but it just wasn't possible. It was always a week, maybe two, after Memorial Day before we could get in.
Yeah. Yeah, which is late.
Yeah.
Late for gardening, yeah.
Yeah. So we had that hillside
mm-hmm.
that we worked on,
mm-hmm.
and apparently the gardens had been larger before.
Huh.
Because there was an area of grass down at the bottom where there was a whole lot of horseradish plants still left over from something.
Hmm.
And I remember my wife and I harvested 2 years' worth of horseradish on those plants that were outside the garden area.
Mm-hmm.
We just dug up the root.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of that went on in the garden plots as well. You would have things come up from the previous gardener,
mm-hmm.
the previous year or years.
Yeah.
You know, and there was lots of sort of perennials
mm-hmm.
that people would put out there, and you didn't know it to
so like what?
Very funny story.
Oh, yes.
Of a lady who, I don't know exactly, she was a foreign student, I don't know from where.
Mm.
And she was out watering her garden, and she just had the hose running full blast, and she was splashing mud and water all over the mm-hmm. garden and everything. And she was telling my next-door neighbor, who was out at his plot, all the different plants that she had planted.
Mm.
And everything she pointed to was what we used to call a buttonweed.
Hmm.
In various stages. You know, they have a rather large head that kind of disrupts the soil when it comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all over her garden. She said, yeah, those are my squash, and those are my watermelons, and those are my cantaloupes.
Oh, no.
Planting, and every one of them was buttonweed. And she had splashed the seeds all over the place, and they weren't firmly in the ground. So there were a lot of people who were trying things for the first time. They'd never had a garden before.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had extremely experienced gardeners.
Mm-hmm.
We had gardeners that used techniques from really primarily America, Asia, and Africa.
Mm.
And very, very interesting technique.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems, as you realize, was that basically we were gardening on a wildlife preserve.
Mm-hmm.
And we had especially problems with rabbits, raccoons, and birds.
Mm.
And everybody had a technique for keeping the raccoons away, keeping the rabbits away. People would take sections of, well, of course, there were lots of tires out there.
Lots of tires?
Yeah.
Why were there tires?
Automobile tires.
Why were there lots of...
I don't know. They don't use those anymore.
No.
Well, the automobile tires were a way to keep varmints away, at least until you're... And a way to keep the soil moist.
Mm, yeah.
People didn't want to go out there and water every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
They had studies to do and all that sort of thing. So
mm-hmm.
They would put dirt inside these tires and then put a lot of water on it, and then they would have to come out for 2-3 days.
Uh-huh.
And they would put netting over squash. They would put squash in those tires. Generally squash or potatoes or
mm-hmm.
some kind of vine plant. And that would keep, if they, you know, the tires were big enough, they would keep some of the varmints off those hills. And then they would put netting over those until the plants got, you know, the plants would come up and they would push that netting away, but it would keep
mm-hmm.
the birds away from the seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they would keep the varmints away from the plants as they
yeah.
were growing.
Yeah.
And that helped quite a bit. There were people who would take sections of those tires.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they found a knife sharp enough to cut them.
Yeah.
They would light these things.
Light them?
Yes. And they would smolder.
Huh.
And supposedly the smoke would keep the rabbits and raccoons away.
Huh.
So.
Wow.
We're not exactly sure to what degree that was successful.
Uh-huh.
No one did any research on it. But people said that it helped.
Hmm.
The thing about the raccoons were that the raccoons always know the night before an ear of corn should be harvested.
Oh, it's true.
Yeah, they're incredible.
Yeah.
And so they would constantly, you know, take care of the corn.
Yeah.
But basically the whole idea was, if you were able to make it difficult enough for a raccoon or a rabbit to get your produce,
mm-hmm.
if you make it a little bit more difficult than the person next door, a raccoon would get their produce.
Yeah.
Right? And that was sort of the running gag, but I think there was a lot of truth in it.
Yeah.
And so people would fence in their entire plot, or they would fence in, different portions of their plot
mm-hmm.
To keep these beasts away from the
Minutes if they were somewhere.
They're probably in somebody's attic somewhere.
Yep. Still searching.
And then there was a person in charge of laying out the plot.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all sort of worked on that, but there was a person in charge of it.
Mm-hmm.
And a person in charge of cleanup day.
Yeah. The two big days of the garden, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Set up and clean up.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a really good relationship with the University Extension because we did a pretty good job.
Okay.
Of, you know, establishing things and cleaning them up.
Mm-hmm.
We had the irrigation system already there.
Yeah.
The water line.
Yeah.
And we put on anti-siphon valves.
Anti-siphon valves?
Yeah, anti-siphon valves.
What are those?
Well, it's interesting. They're probably not still there. This was somebody on the committee got a burr in his saddle that we should be installing anti-siphon valves because we don't know what people are going to be putting on their plants because there was no rule that you had to put in.
Oh, one second, Timothy.
Oh, what the hell are you doing?
I'm doing an interview, Alice.
That's our department administrator.
That's our... Sorry, Timothy.
That's far right.
It's okay, Alice.
No one would be doing an interview this time of morning.
Nobody would be doing an interview right now.
Security.
I'm using an office and they walked in. Okay, so...
There was no rule that you had to do it organically.
Okay, that was one of my questions. No organic rule.
People did, and most of it was organic gardening, but there was no rule that said you had to do it that way.
Okay.
And then, basically the person said, now look, if there's some change in the water pressure for the city of Madison, and that... somebody leaves the hose on a little bit to kind of trickle water in there, and if that hose is sitting in a pool of water, and that water is somehow infected with some sort of non-organic fertilizer or some sort of herbicide, then the water system could suck that water back into the system, and we would be liable. Now, it sounded a little far-fetched to me. But in those days, anti-siphon valves were $2 a piece.
Okay.
We got a special deal $2 a piece for us because we got a special deal from a local hardware store. And we put on an anti-siphon valve on every hose bib.
Wow.
And we raised the gardening fee that year from, seems to me it was like $3, and we went up to $5.
Oh, wow. And these are for 25, but the same size, 25 by 25 foot plots approximately?
I think that's true.
Okay.
And if you were on the gardening committee, you got a double plot.
Okay.
That was how you were paid for your services.
Okay. Did you have to pay for the plot?
And you got it for free.
Oh, and you got it for free. Nice. Okay.
You got a free double plot if you were a member of the gardening committee.
Okay.
So this was kind of a, you know, everybody had an opinion about these anti-siphon valves.
Yeah.
And I think probably the negative ones were probably right in the long run.
Mm-hmm. just that they weren't
the
necessary.
Was related to the guy at the hardware store. I don't know. Yeah. But, but at any rate, that was one of the big things we did. We raised the fee and we put anti-siphon valves on.
What? So that was, do you know, remember what year that was?
Well, that was the year I took over. That was 1979.
Okay.
So, you know, if they're not still there, obviously they started causing trouble because anti-siphon valves can cause trouble.
Mm.
They freeze up.
Mm-hmm.
They don't let you do the water the right way. You know, they're designed to prevent it from going the wrong way.
Yeah.
And then they don't let you do it the right way. So people probably just started taking them off.
Okay. I don't know. I'll have to go look at the spigots. I'm not sure. I haven't heard of them, so aren't there.
They were, the ones we bought were made of brass, and they were a special, just a piece of metal between the hose bib and the hose.
Hmm.
So, you know, you might check it out.
Yeah, I'm going to.
What is the fee now?
What is the what?
The fee
now is $25 a plot.
$25?
Yep.
Well,
yep.
Okay.
Which isn't too much comparatively, I think, for a...
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you consider what people were making in 1979...
Yeah.
It probably fits in quite reasonably.
Yeah. And you can also get half plots, which are only $12.50, which also, you know, so you can get smaller amounts of land, too, if that's what you'd like.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay. As I recall, we did not have that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, wait a minute. Hang on a minute. I hesitate to say either way, but I think there was a half plot.
Oh, okay.
Obviously for $250.
That's a good deal.
I think there was a half plot.
Okay. Do you want to talk more about the how people conceptualized organic in the gardens and why you think that most people were gardening organically? That's something that's interesting to me.
Well, organic gardening really started in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
and they were just coming out with, we call it thuricide. It was a bacteria that took care of the squash beetle.
Mm.
And there was some controversy on some of the things because we weren't really sure if they were really organic or not.
Mm.
Because the word organic did not have all of the regulations necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, white sugar is organic, but a lot of people don't eat it because they consider it white poison.
Yeah.
And so it was, there was a little bit of controversy, but the whole idea was that you did not put out things that would kill the animals that were coming out to get your corn.
Mm. Yeah.
That was the main thing, is that there were rules that you weren't allowed to do anything that would be dangerous to the raccoons or the rabbits or the birds.
Okay.
But in terms of organic, you know, we were reading things like Mother Earth News. My wife and I, for a wedding gift for our wedding in 1976, we got a self-sufficiency book
mm-hmm.
from a friend of ours. And so we were very heavily into this. My wife and I met in Vienna.
Mm.
In Austria. We were married there in 1976. She's Austrian.
Oh, okay.
We went to England for 2 years.
Uh-huh.
And experienced a lot of, a considerable amount of things in the British countryside. We saw how people farmed and, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We were convinced that my first job was going to be as a music professor at a small liberal arts college somewhere in rural America.
Mm.
You know, it's where a lot of people begin.
Uh-huh.
And that we would then have a little acreage,
mm-hmm.
and she would raise children and goats, sort of the kid farm.
Yeah.
I would do professoring in town.
Uh-huh.
Well, my first job was at University of North Texas, which was the second largest music school in the country,
mm-hmm.
and I
Yeah.
Johnson grass and buildings. That's about all you can grow there.
Yep.
And so, and then we moved to Arizona, which is, you know, has its own set of problems. So we never got to have our farm.
Yeah.
So we were kind of preparing ourselves for that. We bought a freezer, and we were literally self-sufficient in vegetables for an entire year from a double plot.
At Eagle Heights.
At Eagle Heights, at a, with a double plot and cleanup day. We never grew Brussels sprouts because we knew on cleanup day there would be plenty of Brussels sprouts available.
Yep.
It was uncanny. Because the thing is, they are ready for harvest very late in the season.
Yep.
And a lot of people have already found a job by then. So you had a lot of abandoned Brussels sprouts. Of course, it could be that we got them because nobody else wanted Brussels sprouts.
Right? Yeah.
That could have been part of it.
Uh-huh.
But it was a very interesting group of mavericks. I have to say, an interesting group of mavericks. You couldn't really call us an organized group in any way. The committee was. You know, and the committee was committed to, you know, getting things done and getting all the stuff and keeping good relationship with the university. But then you had these people come out there and they were bringing all of these techniques from their homeland. And it was, in that way, a really beautiful thing. Because we would learn from one another, oh, how are you doing that, you know? And there would be, for example, they would establish little plateaus, long, oblong plateaus in the garden. Water troughs around them, and they would say, well, that way you get the water to the roots because the water comes in from the little canals there, around the little moats that they would build around these plateaus. And it would seep underneath. You know? And then, of course, the mounds that people would do for their squash. And then there would be a wide variety of different types of row gardening. So it was really quite interesting to see what people did. The first year you were actually, you know, looking around, trying your own techniques out, and looking around what other people would do. And then the second year you'd go out and you'd say, well, I'm going to try this with these for this year.
That sort of thing.
So it was kind of fun to learn from gardeners from around the world. The people who did best against the raccoons were the Africans, it seems. They seem to have the widest variety of techniques that would keep varmints away from their food. I never tried burning the tires. But I did see some smoldering pieces of tire out there from time to time.
It seems like it would smell horrible.
It was pretty bad. But it wasn't enough to really discourage the human beings from walking out there. There was a mild odor, but the animals didn't like it at all.
Yeah. Interesting.
Let's see here.
What other rules did the committee have about what people could do or not in their plots? Were there
I don't remember any really hard and fast rules that we had.
Okay. Just, here's your garden plot, do what you will.
Pretty much. At least that's the way I remember it.
Yeah. No.
I really can't think. Give me some examples of rules that you guys have now, and I'll remember some.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Now there's, people are very concerned about weed issues in the gardens, and so there are, you need to keep your plot, your weeds at least under control, and so there are weed juries composed of other gardeners that go around and decide if a plot is weedy or not. And so I was wondering if, you know, you've talked about the plots being abandoned through the year, which would indicate also that there's probably a lot of weeds and plants that people don't want growing in those gardens because nobody's caring for it. So
weeds were always an issue.
Weeds were always an issue.
You know, starting from the birds
that
spread lovely weed seeds all over the garden.
Mm-hmm.
As I recall, what we did was members of the committee would walk the gardens from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
You could pretty well tell which one was abandoned.
Yeah.
And either we would take it over or ask the person next in the garden plot next door if they would like to take it over.
Mm.
Sometimes we would have people report a garden that had been abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, see if we could get people to take them over.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much the solution.
Yeah.
Because there was really no way to police it in turn.
No.
You know, people would just up and leave and you didn't know where they were.
Yeah.
So it was pretty much, should we say it was informal?
Yeah.
I don't recall any weed juries.
Yeah. No, I think those are relatively new, maybe within the 5 years.
Uh-huh.
Before there were weed height limits, and then your plot could be mowed if you hadn't kept the weeds below 3 feet or something.
3 feet? That's pretty.
It's pretty high.
Weird.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, it seems to me that people would also, like, we'd tie a note
to
one of the sticks and say, you know, if we don't hear from you in 2 weeks, we're going to take this over.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. Did you ever end up with, like, 6 plots because of weed? Did you only ever have 2 plots, or did you take over lots more?
Oh, I took over a couple, as I recall.
Yeah.
I can't remember any specifics, but I remember, you see, the thing is, by the time, I mean, the weeds could grow very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, it was informal.
Yeah.
Pretty much everybody, when these problems arose, it was almost time for the semester to begin. Everybody was busy with other stuff.
Yeah.
And getting their kids into school and all that sort of thing. So, pretty much everybody's plot
went to weed
went
a little
down.
Bit. Yeah.
So, it was, you know, the pot dared not call the kettle black.
Yeah.
So, it was a... one of those things where people didn't worry too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
During the summer, there were enough people to take over plots. In the fall, we had other fish to fry.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. But I don't remember it ever really, you know, people would complain, but, you know, it never really got out of hand.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Sometimes I would tell people, well, pull their weeds for 2 feet into the plot or take it over or, you know, take matters into your own hands because we have no way of policing.
Yeah.
Of course, maybe they were glad to see me leave. I wish to understand
it. You need to be a harder to garden chair.
Right. If you're going to be a president, you got to really clamp down on things.
Hard line on how to do your own gardening.
That's right.
Oh, that's too good.
But I gotta say, we really enjoyed that aspect of Eagle Heights.
Mm.
It was very important to us. The gardening, I don't know if they still have the pottery room. Community center.
I don't think so.
My wife was a potter.
Mm.
And had, you know, taken classes while we were students in England.
Mm-hmm.
They had a kiln.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
a
wow.
Potter's wheel.
Wow.
And, you know, all sorts of tables to work with.
Mm-hmm.
That was, we've still got pottery from those days.
Wow.
And, there was a dark room for photographers.
Yes.
A complete setup.
Wow.
And, a neighbor of mine did that. We did not take part in that. But the pottery room and the gardens were sort of our, escape from the pressures of our studies.
Yes. Yeah.
And then there was a food co-op.
Yeah.
Is that still there?
No, I don't think it is.
Yeah, it was basically a co-op grocery store.
Oh, okay.
And you worked in exchange for your discount.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty well stocked. I remember us buying spices there.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were so much less expensive than the store.
Yeah.
I mean, like 10% of the cost of the store for spices.
Wow.
They were in bulk, and you could take as much as you wanted.
Yeah, I love bulk
food.
So
there were a lot of things that kind of fit into our sort of organic, gentleman farming kind of lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
That we liked a lot about that particular area, so kind of all fit together with the garden.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely does. Were there people who weren't students that gardened in Eagle Heights while you were there?
No, you had to be a resident.
Okay.
You had to be a resident of Eagle Heights.
Oh, okay.
And so we weren't able to give any plots to anybody outside. We had enough people to pretty much take over everything anyway, so.
So it was always full no matter
what? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we'd have people come in the fall and they would be sort of interested in the gardening club and find out about it.
Mm-hmm.
Say, well, there's a couple of plots here that need some rehabilitation. Would you like to try it out? And so, you know, they'd take over. But it was always associated with an Eagle Heights address.
It was also always associated with people. I didn't hear that last word that you said.
It was associated with that Eagle Heights address.
Address, okay.
Yeah.
How were plots assigned?
Well, we had sign-ups.
Mm-hmm.
We had a kind of a spring festival in the community center.
Mm-hmm.
And this was sort of sign-ups for like all of the community groups.
Okay.
Summer programs and things. And I remember we had an organic gardener in the area who came and sat at our table every year. And he was wonderful. And, of course, he was able to sell his book there. And
do you remember his name?
Oh, gosh. I don't.
Huh. But
I cannot imagine I could possibly remember.
But he has a book on organic gardening.
Yeah, it was a book that he had out in the 70s.
Okay.
He had a rather severe stuttering problem.
Mm.
That's what I remember most about it. But the more he talked about gardening, the more he relaxed. The better he was able to speak. He had tremendous blockage. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just stuttering, it was blockage.
Yeah.
Being able to, you know, find the next word.
Yeah.
But I remember observing him over the 2 hours or 3 hours that we were there, that he got much more relaxed and was able to speak much more clearly about things.
Mm.
So it could have been that we were as much therapy for him as he was for us.
Uh-huh.
We were, you know, he had all sorts of techniques that were good for Wisconsin gardening.
Mm-hmm.
And then people would come in and ask him questions about it. He was always excited to answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had the sign-ups, and then we would, basically, there was a committee meeting where we just, you know, laid them out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more or less the first people to sign up were the people who got the ones closest to the gate.
Mm.
You know, I guess there wasn't really a gate. It was just sort of an opening there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so the committee members got to choose the plots they wanted first.
Mm-hmm.
And then we assigned the rest.
Mm-hmm.
I remember wanting to get a garden plot toward the middle because the rabbits came in from the sides. So the gardening committee always wanted plots in the middle.
Uh-huh.
So we could be a little bit protected by
The full by the time they get to your plot.
Yeah, it could have been. It could have been that we assigned them from the middle out.
Huh.
I think that's probably more realistic than starting at the entryway, because that would penalize the people who signed up first.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then we had, you know, people would call and request a plot after that day, and, you know, we just sort of fill them in as they called up and mm-hmm. asked about it.
Okay.
We put up signs, garden plots were still available, that kind of thing. So just kind of get mm-hmm. the word out. It was a lot of word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Especially as, you know, the Philippine students talk to the Philippine students and the African students talk to the African students.
Yeah.
So you kind of get this network of, oh, you could get a garden plot kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we were generally full.
Okay. Yeah.
And of course, then we had to mark them.
Yeah. So how did you end up marking them? You had sticks in the corners?
I think that was the way we did it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had to set them off, and I think we put a little label on a stick in the middle of the plot.
Mm.
So that people would know which one was theirs.
Must have looked funny before things started growing.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Fun weeds took over.
Yep. It was a big empty pile of dirt, you know, and then things start getting.
But you know, that first Saturday, there were a lot of people out there.
Mm.
You know, it didn't take long before those gardens were established.
Mm-hmm.
People just loved it.
Yeah.
They really did. And of course, they had been out of classes since the middle of May.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, unless they were taking summer courses, you know, they were just sitting around waiting for the gardens to take over.
You know, yeah.
Open up, you know.
Yep.
And so, I know that's the way we were. We were, of course, we had a two-bedroom and no children.
Oh.
Which is a story within itself. Because we drove up on the day we arrived in Madison, which was in July.
Uh-huh.
25th, as I recall, and it was, we had all of our worldly goods in a Plymouth Fury, a 1978 Plymouth Fury,
mm-hmm.
and we drove up, and we had no idea whether we were going to get an apartment or not.
Oh, wow.
And the lady said, well, we just sent out letters to the Wisconsin residents, and as soon as we hear back from them, we'll be able to tell you whether you've got an apartment or not.
Ugh.
So wait a minute. We're here, and then there's a 1978 rented Plymouth Fury outside with all of our worldly goods in it. Is there any way you can get us in?
Yeah.
Said, what was your name again? We were number 3 on the waiting list.
Oh.
She says, we always make it to number 3 on the waiting list. I can get you in today.
Oh, excellent. Oh, good.
And so she said, as long as you don't mind paying half of July's rent. Now I remember it was the 16th.
Mm.
Because she said, rent as of yesterday.
Yep.
And as long as you don't mind taking a two-bedroom apartment, we'll be glad to. Okay, now we paid, it was $124.50 for a one-bedroom. And $136.50 for a two-bedroom.
Well, that's not bad at all.
And we were concerned about the extra $12 on our budget.
Mm.
We're poor as church mice.
Mm-hmm.
And so we took the two-bedroom. Okay, we used the second bedroom essentially as a garden preparation area.
Mm.
Like everybody I knew had
uh-huh, yeah.
You could see, gardening season was coming up, you see all the seedlings in the windows.
Yeah.
And then we bought a work light.
Yeah, okay.
In fact, we still have the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Fluorescent work light.
Yeah.
That we put over a table. And we had so many tomato plants that we sold them.
But you sold your tomato seedlings?
Well, we had tomato seedlings.
Yeah.
Little plants to put out.
Uh-huh.
We had too many of them, and so people didn't have any. And I said, well, look, we'll just sell to you half the price of what you pay in the store.
Nice, yeah.
And so there was a lot of that going on, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then we we made our sauerkraut
mm.
in that spare bedroom.
Yeah.
And that was one of the advantages of getting that cleanup day and taking it, you know, taking part in it.
Mm-hmm.
We had huge amounts of cabbage.
Yep.
People had not harvested.
Yeah.
And so we made sauerkraut 1 year. We had a whole year of kraut.
Wow.
And wow. So it, the, that was probably the most important part of it, was the cleanup day, because you got a chance to
yeah.
get these old vegetables.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. It's a nice extra bit of it. I mean, in addition to your two plots, to have all
right,
those extra.
A few perks for the work.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You mentioned, I'm curious about what you grew in your plot, but then also you mentioned that there were the things that came up because another gardener had grown them in that place before.
Yeah.
And so what kinds of things survived the plowing twice a year that would come back up?
Horseradish.
Okay, just mostly the horseradish.
Mostly the horseradish.
Okay.
I can't remember anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Those roots went deep.
Yeah.
I'm telling people, if you plant horseradish, put a flat stone down 1 foot.
Oh.
You know, 9 inches or so.
Yeah.
So that the so it hits the rock and doesn't grow any further.
That's a good idea.
But somehow people didn't get that message.
Yeah.
So we had lots of horseradish coming
uh-huh.
up. And we would tell
uh-huh.
people, oh, by the way, if you want horseradish, keep that one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
you could have the same plot year after year,
well,
approximately.
Well, that was hard to tell.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
you had to lay it out every year.
We had to lay it out every year. And so mm-hmm. the plots, you know, the plots were somewhat a different size from what I recall.
Yeah.
You know, that if we had this many feet, we would get expanded to 30 by 30, we'd do it.
Okay.
You know, if we had that, you know, that few people that year.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It was difficult for me to judge that because it was only like 2 years I was there and part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
it seemed to me that we would expand or contract them within limits
uh-huh.
by the number of people that we had.
Interesting. That makes a lot of sense.
I only remember expanding. I don't ever remember contracting.
Mm-hmm.
But in our own plot, as I recall, we planted virtually everything but corn.
Yeah.
We heard too many horror stories about corn.
Yeah, I know.
You water it, you care for it, and then the raccoons get it, and forget it.
Yeah.
I can buy that at the store, and of course, lots of farmers market, the big farmers market.
Uh-huh.
I assume they still have that on the square.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Huge market on the square.
There was plenty of corn to be purchased at relatively cheap prices.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So we didn't grow corn, but
mm-hmm.
about everything else. And we tried, you know, exotic things. You get the seed catalogs
mm-hmm.
during semester break. In the second semester, you order your seeds.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know the drill.
I do. Yeah. I do indeed.
But we basically tried a lot of different things because, you know, that was really kind of our experiment for what we thought was going to be our lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we have really wanted to garden now that I'm retired.
Yeah.
I have a garden plot.
You do? Okay.
Out in basically about this, a little smaller than my double plot at Eagle Heights.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a kind of a raised bed thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just waiting for me. The replacement for buttonweeds is pampas grass.
What kind of grass? Tapas grass?
Pampas. P-A-M-P-A-S.
P-A-N-P-A-S.
Yeah, that's what we call it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm correct or not, but it's a basically a terrible weed that
mm-hmm.
will just completely take over a plot.
Yeah.
And because I built this thing a number of years ago and never got to it.
Uh-huh.
See, if you're going to garden in Arizona, you got to garden in the fall and the winter and the spring.
Oh, how weird. Yeah.
You can't, you just can't garden in the summer unless
uh-huh.
you've got, you know, a great Trello
Yeah.
It gets unbearably hot for certain plants.
Uh-huh.
So your chances of freezing are much less than your chance of burning your garden up.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So you know, if you're really going to garden, you got to garden in the winter. Well, you know, in the semester, in the academic year, you just don't have time to garden.
No, there's no time.
So I'm kind of hoping I can get at it this year.
I hope you can. I was going to ask if you were gardening still. But...
to think about all these wonderful things we did.
I know.
So now I need to get to work because things are cooling down.
Mm. Seasonality is so strange, especially as it changes so drastically too. We're just ending our season. But we haven't had any really, really killing frost, so a lot of things are still growing out there, actually, which is nice.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to wait as long as we could.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, it was the end of October when we had to quit.
Yeah.
The latest.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, as they say, everybody talks about the weather, but no one does anything about it. it's one of those things you live with as a gardener. Weather report.
Mm-hmm.
If you need to put your cut off milk cartons on the top of your plant, your seedlings.
Mm-hmm.
And because you can get a late freeze as well.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, very late. What else did I want to ask you? Is there anything you thought I might ask you about that I haven't yet?
You know, I can't think of a thing. I've covered all of my notes.
I noticed that you were referring to notes through our conversation. I like it. Oh, I did.
Well, I took your email and I printed it out, and then sort of looked down the particular things that you wanted to ask about, and then just basically wrote
your thoughts.
Individual words that would conjure up all sorts of memories.
And you have a lot. I guess I wanted to just ask a little bit more about. The university didn't do anything for maintaining or organizing or supervising the gardens, right? So you just asked somebody to come and plow in the spring and in the fall, or what? How did that work?
There was a contact person we had. Mm. I remember in the great big White House.
Mm.
University Agricultural Extension.
Mm-hmm.
Called.
Yeah.
Just refer to them as the UW Extension.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they plowed and manured.
Yeah.
I don't know about the manuring, whether that was twice a year, but I know they plowed twice a year. They plowed it up for us to get it broken up.
Mm-hmm.
And then they plowed everything under at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was just sort of an automatic thing. That's what they've always done for us.
Yeah.
I don't think we've paid any fees for it at all.
Okay. Did you pay rental fees for the land? Because the land around you and where you were was owned at one time or supervised by the College of Agriculture. Do you remember if you had to pay rental fees on that land?
I don't remember us paying any sort of rent for the land. I know we paid water.
Okay. Okay.
And that varied.
Mm.
Raised that fee, it was not only because of the anti-siphon valves, but because the water bills seemed to be getting higher.
Yeah.
So, that was the only thing I remember paying, was the water bill.
Mm-hmm. That's not bad. So what then did you use all the plot fees for the water? Mostly?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. It was kind of a break-even situation.
Yeah.
We were going to turn a profit the year after we put the anti-siphon valves on, but we were getting low in our cash reserves, and so we thought, you know, we don't want to raise the fee every year.
Yeah,
we'll just do it, you know, one fell swoop, and then we'll live on that for, you know, 5 years or so.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Until that becomes no longer a break-even situation.
Balancing.
Are they paying rent?
No.
For that land now? Oh, okay.
No, they aren't paying rent now. So I'm not, I guess I don't know when the paying, I know when the gardens first moved there, they had to pay rent to the College of Agriculture.
Uh-huh.
But I don't, it must have been sometime between 66 and 78 that they stopped, and I'm not sure when.
Okay.
Yeah, if you weren't paying, so it was, yeah, I'm not sure when they stopped paying rent then, but.
Well, was that about the time that the Ag College got the patent for rat poison?
I don't know. I haven't heard about the patent.
That would be an interesting connection. From what I understand, the University of Arizona held the patent for every rat poison developed.
Hmm.
And that rat poison companies pay the University of Arizona every time they produce product because it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one that causes the rats to get thirsty.
Oh, and then just
and
drink. Then,
therefore, they leave.
Huh.
Seek water.
Huh.
They don't die in the building.
Yeah.
That was the main, that was the big development. And from what I understand, it was a professor at UW that developed that.
Oh.
And it brought tremendous amounts of revenue into the university.
Interesting.
So that would be an interesting connection, whether that was, you know, whether the, and there was also vitamin A extraction.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of the vitamin A.
Yeah. About that time, the university was starting to bring in so much revenue, they probably thought, well, this is ridiculous, it's not worth the paperwork.
Yeah. It's true.
But well, it would be interesting to know if there's a connection between those two.
It would be that. I'm gonna, I will explore that.
That's what you researchers are good for.
Yeah, right. I guess so. I feel like I haven't had time to do as much research as I need to do.
Oh, well, of course, there's never enough time.
I know.
Not enough time in a lifetime.
I know. Are there questions you have about what the gardens are like now, or questions for me about what I've been doing?
Well, I'm just wondering if there was a, if there as big a variety of gardening techniques as there was when I was there.
Mm. Yeah, I think I would say that there are. There is as big a variety. There's uh-huh. still a high proportion of foreign students at the gardens. It's also now not restricted to Eagle Heights community members or people living at Eagle Heights. So there are graduate students. There are students who don't live. I'm a student, but I don't live at Eagle Heights, and I have a plot. But there are also community members who don't have any connection to the university who are able to get plots there. So it's nice because there's a very wide range of people who garden there. And some people have been gardening there for a very long time, 20
yeah.
years or more, because of this extension to community
members. Have you
been
able to talk to them?
I've talked to nobody that's been there. I have people who I'm going to talk to who've been there 20 plus years. I've talked to some people who've been there about 10 years. But what's interesting is that there was a big shift, I guess at about in the mid-90s, it shifted from being plowed every year to not being plowed at all. So it's completely perennial now. There's no more plowing, and people, therefore you don't have to do the layout. You'd miss out on your cleanup day, sadly.
Yeah.
It doesn't become a free-for-all at the end because everybody, so there's no setup or takedown day, and people can plant perennial things and also leave things in the ground much later. So there are raspberries and rhubarb and asparagus and strawberries all over the garden now.
Yeah, that was one of the problems.
Exactly. So
I tell you, it really did help the wheat.
The plowing did?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you plow all that under, and it's organic material, and, you know,
yeah.
it sits over the winter.
Yeah.
It's hard to fight weeds out there anyway, but...
it is.
I tell you, one thing that you're talking kind of stirred up in my brain.
Yeah.
I cannot say with 100% assurity...
Uh-huh.
that it was all Eagle Heights people.
Okay.
There may have been some students. We may have allowed students at the university
yeah.
to have a plot.
Yeah.
So that may have been inaccurate.
Okay.
It has been now, what is that, 30 years?
Yeah, it has been. It's been a long time.
And that has been a very busy 30 years.
I imagine so.
If I would have known 30 years ago that you were going to be calling me, I would have written everything down.
I think that's what everybody I've talked to would say to me, too. It's impossible to... I mean, the fact that the people that I've talked to remember so much about the gardens has been pretty remarkable, I think. It really sticks with people, that the place does.
It was really a wonderful time in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you always think as a student, you have absolutely no time to do anything.
Yeah.
And then, of course, then you get engaged in real life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like kids, career, all that sort of thing, and you realize how much time you had.
Yeah.
Actually, guard.
Yeah.
It was for us. It was as much survival financially.
Yeah.
As it was enjoyable pastime.
Yeah.
Of course, we were making more money at the University of Wisconsin than we'd ever made before.
Mm-hmm.
But we had used up all of our cash reserves by studying in England.
Yeah.
And so we were, my wife was a school teacher in Vienna when we met.
Okay.
And we had some money saved up. And I had basically full-time employment.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't full-time pay. And so we had some money saved up, and we took that, we went to England, and that got us back.
Yeah.
And then we found that the money we saved in gardening was really quite good, especially since we got a free plot. We didn't have to pay the water bill.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was essentially free for us.
Uh-huh.
Now we have to worry about, well, you know, is gardening in the desert going to put our water bill up so high that we might as well just go down the store and buy the vegetables?
Yeah, it's true. I can't imagine how much water you'd have to put on. You will have to put on your garden.
Yeah.
it's incredible. So what else about... So it's perennial. It's now officially organic.
Okay.
So it's sort of part of the rules. It's also... Oh. All of the open spaces out there are now part of, you know, the Picnic Point Woods. I don't know how much you walked around in the bike path to campus.
I remember Picnic Point,
yeah. Yeah, all of that is now officially the Lakeshore Nature Preserve, and it's under a master plan. So the gardens are actually a part of the Lakeshore Nature Preserve.
Uh-huh.
So that changes some of the management issues
associated
with the gardens. But
and, of course, organic gardening has come a long way in 30 years.
Mm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's changed a lot. I think. What else? Anything else you were wondering about when I contacted you about the garden?
No, I don't think so. This has been a wonderful walk down memory lane.
Oh, I have enjoyed it thoroughly, too. I love hearing people's stories about the place, so.
Right.
It's been, yeah.
Listen, I have your email address.
Good.
And as I'm putting out my own plot here, if I think of anything, I'll send you an email.
That would be great. Oh, can you remember any names of other people that I may want to contact?
Not at all.
Okay.
I'm sorry to say.
Don't worry about it. No problem. I have probably more interviews that I still need to set up than I can deal with successfully right now.
There were no other music students.
Oh, interesting.
I would remember the music student stage, but none of those people were involved with it, and I just, you know, keep in contact with any of the fellow committee members.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. Well, thank you so much. This has been a joy to talk with you for a while.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it very much, and like I said, if I think of anything else, I'll send you you also need to.
Great, and I will keep you, I'm planning on keeping everybody informed about what is happening with this piece
good,
that I'm
good.
Trying
I'd
to
like
write.
To,
so.
I'd like to read the results if it's available. Just send me an electronic version.
I will do so.
Great.
Okay, bye.
Best wishes to you.
You too.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye.